definitely want to be a double champ. Like, I think that I can be competitive in both of those divisions. I think that I'm very, my game, my style works very well in both of those divisions. I think it's just motivating the guys that are actually holding the belts to fight for the belts. I think that's now becoming the tricky part. And then I just kept rotating with it to keep it nice and tight and just keep applying that pressure. And then we ended up kind of on the ground, and that's when I could put a full like bridge into it with my hips. And then at this point, I knew that it was on and it was tight, and that she wouldn't be able to pull her foot out. All of my major training camps are predominantly done out of Athos, so that's where that link came in. And Galvao has been nothing but welcoming, and Angelica has been nothing but welcoming, and the whole team there has been very, very supportive. I wanted to love competing, but I didn't for a little bit there, and then I refound some of that enjoyment through competition, and now I absolutely love it. But if I wanted to be miserable, I'd be miserable and rich, and I'd be working a desk job. If my aim in life was to just be miserable, then I wouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu.
This episode is brought to you by loanoptions.ai. Go to loanoptions.ai/58 for all your loan needs. These guys are the number one pound for pound loan platform in Australia. Whether you're looking for a car loan, equipment loan, home loan, personal loan, you can go to loanoptions.ai, and they have three simple steps. All you need to do is input, they'll compare and give you options, and you select from the options. It's easy as that. Go to loanoptions.ai/58, the number one pound for pound loan platform in Australia. This episode is also brought to you by Ancestral Nutrition. Go to the link below. It'll take you directly to their site where you can get certified Australian grass-fed beef liver and beef organ capsules. This is the number one site in Australia. I'd say really internationally, because Australia has some really, really good cattle. Go below to the description, click there, use the code Diogo10 for an extra 10% off. I have the Primal Energy each morning because beef liver is a way of life. Add it to your stack. Go to ancestralnutrition.com.au, use code Diogo10. Let's get into the episode.
Crazy. So a bit of a slow start morning, which is, it's nice. It's nice once, especially after spending a lot of weekends just pinging all over the place. It's good to have a slow start, nice coffee, all that kind of stuff.
I hear you. Where you at? Where you at now? Melbourne?
So I'm staying in the Hawthorne area, which is nice.
Gotcha. I've got these glasses on. The viewers probably never seen me with glasses. and that's because I got this, look at this shiner.
Oh, beautiful.
You see that?
You look like a fighter.
Look at this.
That's a good one.
I look like a badass, eh?
You do. Holy shit, how'd you get that?
We were training in training, actually. I got copped one of those accidental headbutts. You know, those are always fun.
Like in the eye socket.
Yeah, it hit me up here, and then it bruised there, and now it just looks like I love Black Sabbath. You know what I mean?
People pay good money for that kind of makeup. Let me tell you, people pay good money for an eye that looks like that.
Oh, it's so good. So I don't know. I don't know how long it heals. Do you know how long would a black eye take to heal?
I don't know. It depends, mate. Like, I've had friends that have just been sitting on black eyes for weeks, but it should be gone within like a week or so.
Oh, don't hit me with weeks, Adele.
It'll fade out. It'll fade. But, like, you can't tell. When you're wearing the glasses, you can't tell at all. Unless, like, you're telling me to look at it. You can't really see it. My face doesn't really bruise that much, to be honest. I've had some, like, decent elbows and knees and, you name it. It's landed in my eye socket. And I just, like, my eyes don't bruise. But I have gotten decent cauliflower before.
Oh, have you hit cauliflower?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I had surgery on this year because my mum wasn't happy. I was about 16 years old, and It was just from a straight elbow. Somebody was trying to pass guard. It was a straight elbow, and it just clipped me right in the side of the head. My ear puffed up. It closed up all the way, kind of, so that like my actual ear hole was decently closed over, so I couldn't even hear that well. And we drained it. It was still just puffing up. So like my mum insisted that we go to an ear, nose, throat doctor and had it like surgically taken out. So they cut down the back, they peel it, they take out like the hematoma that sits in the ear, they stitch it back up. So they do like 5 stitches down the back, and they did 2 stitches like through and through to kind of hold the skin to the cartilage so it doesn't fill up again.
Right.
So this one got a little bit mangled. This one surprisingly is held up okay. You can't see, but if you feel it, it's like it's slightly thicker than what an ear should probably be.
Due to an elbow, not like wrestling or like squashing your ear to someone just elbowed you.
It was in jiu-jitsu training. It was just straight elbow. Somebody was trying to kind of pull my head off to the side, but they were using their elbow to pull my head, and it just came at a little bit of pace to my ear, and it happens sometimes.
Yeah, no, definitely accidental headbutts, knees, elbows. I guess it's part of the game. But you've never been. I've been cut once. I was cut about 3 months ago. There was another headbutt. Seems like we got a lot of accidental headbutts in here.
No, I think the worst I've had is I split my chin open in Wales. Actually, we had a team event, so I had like a team of girls versus another team of girls. So we kind of just rotate through each of us. And I was one of the first that was up, and I won my first match and went straight into the next one. And I had a straight ankle lock. And when I went to go readjust, I kind of sat my body up and she kicked her leg forward, and we happened to be like right on the boundary of the mat. And my hands were like locked onto this ankle. So I was falling forward and I couldn't pull my hands out because they were stuck. And I kind of saw the ground getting closer and closer to my face. And I'm like, well, I'd rather land on my chin than land on my teeth and my nose. So I looked up and I landed on my chin. And then I thought I was fine, but a friend of mine that was on the side on the boundary was like, oh, careful of all the blood. I'm like, what do you mean? And then I started feeling around and I realized that I'd split open my chin, which was, you know, a little bit traumatic. But I went off, the medic kind of did some paper stitches on it, and then they sent me back out again for the next couple of rounds, and I ended up winning the next few rounds, and then had to fly home from Wales to come home, and then ended up getting stitches in.
Mate, you're a savage, eh? I want to talk about the last couple comps that you've won, the belt you retained, the fast submission that you got in WNO, and but in recovery, like what do you do for recovery? Like, because I've got this black eye, I've had cuts and that, and I don't really know. Like, sometimes my body's just continuously aching, and I'm trying to go to the gym and then do jiu-jitsu at the same time. So, like, what's your recovery process? Because you went from WNO to then defending a title at Grapple Fest, and then you came back, done some stitches. Like, and what was your process of getting back on the mat?
For me, like, I started jiu-jitsu when I was very young, so the actual kind of wear and tear on my body, like, I want to say I'm used to, but it's one of those things where it's like I wake up in the morning sore here and there. So whether that's like I'll stretch it out or do some active recovery stuff to make sure that it's somewhat awake before I get on the mats and actually do the hard training. Like I'll try and stay proactive on that. I make sure that I take like Sundays off for me. Sundays are like purely an active recovery day. So the most I'll do is go for a walk just to kind of rest my body. I went through a period of doing a lot of like ice baths and saunas when I was actually in Perth, because I was in Perth for a little bit.
Yeah.
But since I've come back here, I'm now looking to see if I can convert a chest freezer into an ice bath so I can get back into that and start doing that a little bit more frequently. But I feel like my body is just so used to it. The main thing that gets me right now at the moment is the travel. It's all the difference in time zones. Specifically, Europe is a tough one to come to and from. That takes me a week or so to really be able to bounce back into gear.
Do you think ice baths actually help, or is it this like Joe Rogan effect fad? Well, not Joe Rogan. What's that guy? Wim Hof effect.
Yeah. Because
I feel like everyone is doing ice baths at the minute. Like at one point it was sauna, which I loved. Like, I love like warm. Now everyone's doing ice bath, and I heard it really helps. Like you're putting your body into a sort of stress state. And then you hop out and you feel this euphoria because your body was in this stress state and then it hops out. But do you reckon it actually helps?
I'm a research kind of person. Like if there's not a lot of research on it and there's no like definitive answer saying like, yes, it does this, then I don't think it does as much as people think it does. I don't think it has a massive effect on actual like physical recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But if it helps people mentally, I think it people get out of ice baths feeling more awake or feeling more motivated and things like that. If that's the impact it has on you, then that's great. For me, I absolutely hate cold water. And if those 3 minutes in an ice bath are the hardest part of my day, then everything else is easy in comparison.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So that was the effect it had on me. It was, if I can do this thing that's really hard and uncomfortable, then everything else is easy in comparison.
I do hear like it's great effect. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I hate the cold and I'm like trying to find every bit of anyone that says it's bad for you. And I'm like, let me try and go with this.
But, yeah. It doesn't work, right, guys?
Yeah. But yeah, overall I do hear that it's quite good. And I guess ice on the muscle can't really hurt. But sauna, I love a sauna, right? Put me in sauna. I had to cut for that little comp I did and I was like, just pop me in a sauna, let me just like chill. Like I went in there which isn't that great. Like sometimes I do really silly, stupid things, Adele. Like I went in there, it was a steam room at the gym. And then I went in there. All these guys have all their shirts off, right? And they're in there for a small amount of time. Yeah. I went in there with full jumper,
Jesus,
full trackies. And I was like, I'm cutting weight, so I'll just go in there and do this. Probably could have passed out, hit my head, and died.
Jesus. Tell me you had somebody at least monitoring you or keeping an eye on you or something.
I had AirPods on and I was watching your match.
Okay, lovely. At least you're doing something productive.
Let's go. Have you done much weight cut? Like, what's your process there?
I do a little bit of weight cutting here and there. Like for me, 80cc specifically, 55 is a really easy division for me to get to. Like 55 is sitting kind of a kilo under what I naturally walk around at. So I'm like a 56, 57, like naturally walking around at about that. So 55 is quite easy. But I did do light feather at the start of last year in the gi, which is, I want to say, my body weight had to be something like 51.9 or so.
Mm.
And that was not comfortable to get down to whatsoever. That was a lot of dieting, a lot of being very, very strict with intake. And then towards the back end of it, it was manipulating water and sodium and all that kind of stuff. But I did it under the watchful eye of a guy called Jordan. He runs an Instagram called The Fight Dietitian.
Okay, yeah.
So he works with guys like Volk, for instance. He works with Volk. He works with Izzy Adesanya. He works with Craig Jones. So he works with – he knows how best to manipulate those last couple of kilos, but just good diet in general.
And manipulation of water, what do you mean by that?
So like your body holds a kind of baseline level of water for just kind of basic function. You know, your body is a large percentage of water. And when you get to the last couple of days, you want to flush out any water that's not like that's not a necessity for you. Because you can quite easily drop 1, 2, 3, sometimes 4, 5, 6 kilos just in sweating out water. When you get to like the kind of higher stage of things, you end up sweating out more water, which can get more dangerous because it's dehydrating your body. Your body can't do the functions that it wants to do. But if we're talking like 1 or 2 kilos of just sweating out water that you don't need, generally the effects are like your body leans out a little bit, like your skin gets a bit tighter, all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of an easier way to drop weight rather than just flat out dieting.
So Ilya Topuria from the UFC, mm-hmm. his last fight when he was, because he says that the day before his weight cutting, before he steps on a scale, he likes to have 500 mils of wine and that dehydrates his body. So he's happy on the day before cutting So his mood is just cheerful around his team. And then when he wakes up, his body's dehydrated and he's ready to hop on his scale. What's your thoughts on that?
if it helps him and it makes him feel better, because going through the weight cutting process is something that's not enjoyable. Like, it's, especially those last few days, can be quite uncomfortable. And if he's doing something that works for him and makes him feel happy, and it's something that he's looking forward to, and you can find those little wins, then I think if it's working for him, then it's working for him. For me, it's when you get to those last couple of days, it turns into like the volume battle of like how you can get the most amount of calories in with the least amount of volume, because it turns into like what the actual physical weight is in your stomach. So sometimes I really like those last couple of days because I can have like high calorie foods without, like, instead of eating a bunch of vegetables, I'm eating more like calorie dense foods that just weigh less, if that makes sense. So if he's doing something that he's enjoying, that's something he can look forward to in a really uncomfortable period of time, then all power to him.
What's your go-to just before like you're stepping on a scale? Like, or actually, what's your go-to meal after a comp?
After a comp, I'm like, for me, before a comp, I'm saving all these recipe videos, and I'm like, I want this burger and I want this. But then after a comp, because of all the adrenaline dump and all that, I'm just not hungry whatsoever. But if I was to eat, it'd definitely be like an American style burger. Burger and chips.
I love chicken wings, eh? Chicken wings. I like those too.
They're good.
Hit me with kilos of chicken wings. But yeah, I'm similar in a sense that if I'm at the gym or if I'm training or doing anything, I don't really like to eat after a day.
Yeah, I've always been like the first couple of hours after competing, I don't want to look at food, I don't want to touch food. And then, you know, a few hours after that, then I start getting a little bit more hungry, and then a few hours after that, I'm happy to eat.
Gotcha. I got a little question here because it popped up on my feed, and having you're way like very much a high level athlete, especially in Australia, and you know, around the world, but in Australia, probably to me one of the best female that in Australia right now. And I saw this on Bernardo's page, and he said it was something that went viral on his Facebook group. And it's just a question to all black belts. How old were you when you started, and how old were you when you got your black belt?
Right. I was 10 years old when I started, around about that mark. And I was 22. I was either 22 or 23. Now you got me thinking. I want to say I was 23, because I've had it for a year and a bit, so I want to say I was like 23 when I got my 22 or 23 when I got my black belt. One of the two of those.
Was that your favorite belt to get?
I think, like, yes. It's kind of the where everything leads. It's what you
quintessential. Yeah.
Where all the years and years and years it's kind of lead up to. But next to that, probably my blue belt was a really enjoyable belt to get for me. I went. I got some of my junior belts, so I got up to, I think, something like orange as a junior belt, and then I went back to white belt so I could compete with the adults. And so I went kind of white, then yellow, then orange, then back to white, then to blue.
Were you one of the purple belts that miss warm-ups?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I lived in a gym though, so I went from like coaching a class to then being in the next class and just kind of like getting water, getting change, and then I'm like, oh, okay, it's tech time. I guess I missed the warm-up today. Whoops.
notorious purple belt thing like to do. Did your parents push you into, not push you, but did they sign you up for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and get you like towards the sport? And like what was your motivation throughout those teens to continue doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Because me, I have a kid, and I want to open up a gym. I definitely know that I want him to do the sport. I don't want to force him into the sport. So what was that nurture from a kid into your teens in the sport like?
So for me, none of my parents or nobody in my family ever did martial arts. I actually started doing like more kind of classic sports. I did tennis for a little bit. I did AFL for a little bit. I did soccer for a little bit. Pretty much anything my older brother did, I then wanted to do. So, you know, if he was doing soccer, I was doing soccer. But around about the time I was like 9 or 10, I decided that when I grow up, I wanted to be a police officer. I made that executive decision, the mature 10-year-old I was. And I literally just did a Google search in what's the closest martial art place to where I was living at the time. And because I thought martial arts would be very helpful for, you know, when I had my career as a police officer, I picked the closest place. It happened to be doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The coach that I had at the time, so when I walked into the gym, the coach was a really lovely guy. His name is David Christopher. He was just really great with kids, really good environment, lots of fun games, lots of very engaging activities that we did, and I just kind of fell in love with it. At the time, I was doing soccer and Jiu-Jitsu kind of hand in hand, so one night was soccer, one night was Jiu-Jitsu. And I just kind of progressively got more and more obsessed with it. Like, I was the only girl in class and I was really motivated to get better than all the boys in the class and kind of beat them up a little bit. And over time, I started doing soccer a lot less, and then I just started going headfirst into jiu-jitsu. But my parents never – they never forced me to do it. They never, you know, made any ultimatums for me. They just – whatever I wanted to do, they encouraged me and – drove me there, and mum would take me to all the competitions, and they just let me pursue my passion kind of as I wanted to.
And when did they go, you know what, like, wow, like, Adele's pretty good at this. Like, we definitely should, you know, steer her in this sport. Was it because did you win Worlds as a blue belt?
I did when I was 16 years old, and I think, like, to what you're saying, I think that was the tipping point. I won a local competition that got me a ticket to travel through to LA.
Yeah.
So I won something local. They gave me the funds to be able to go to LA and compete at Worlds for the first time. And I think that was very eye-opening, like going to the pyramid, going to IBJJF Worlds as a juvenile, seeing how many people were there, seeing how big the event was, seeing how professionally it was run as well, just like was very, very eye-opening. I think for me and my mum at the time, we just kind of, we were in awe of how big the sport was. Mm. And then I competed there, I won there, was obviously very excited and very happy, and then made the decision of, no, I want to do that again, and then again, and then again, and then again.
At that point, it's like, it's looking at my child and they've, you know, gone at their level that they're at to the pinnacle of the sport. I'm sure as like parents that would have been a super proud moment.
There's this really nice photo of like me and mum hugging at the very end, and it's like one of my favorite photos of just how emotional I was and how emotional she was and how proud she was looking. My dad unfortunately couldn't come. He was holding down the fort back at home, but they were very, very excited for me for sure.
Coming into competition, for anyone listening that wants to, you know, pursue as an athlete in the sport, what's your advice to them?
If you're coming into it from, like, if you're just starting in competitions, my advice would be just register. Like, that is the hardest thing. That is the hardest part about competing. It's having the not even the motivation, but the I would say like letting go of the anxiety and the fear and just pulling the trigger on actually getting in the registration, because there's no real downside to it. It's like any skill. It's a practice skill, getting out there and competing and getting on the stage and dealing with the referees and the weigh-in and all those like little things. It's all a practice skill. It's not necessarily the same as rolling on the training mats or, you know, training at other gyms' open mats. It's all very different. So my best piece of advice would be just pull the trigger on it. Just do it, because pulling the trigger on getting the registration is the hardest part. The actual competition is what it is.
Talking about competition, let's review your fastest submission in WNO history, and also the flow grappling, which is insane. Like when you got this submission, were you like, what was your thoughts just running through at the end before we go through the thoughts during the match?
So for me, the whole match was We were very specific on how we did the lead up to this because we had 2 weeks. I say we because it's not all just coming from me. I have a team of people behind me that help me, whether that be on the mental side of things, whether that be on what I'm specifically working on when we're talking about training sessions, whether that be strategy, you know, in the weights room, whatever it's going to be. I have a whole team of people that are very supportive and help me to go out there in the best possible shape that I can be in. So a lot of research went into in the 2 weeks we were given because I got this match because somebody had pulled out of this match due to an injury. We straight away went into, let's do research. Let's make sure that we understand what the most likely outcomes are going to be in this match. So lots and lots of research and then talking about some good strategies we could start to pull off in the match, and that's what led to the submission. I think some people kind of watch the match and go, oh, it was a lucky grab. And if that's the opinion they have, that's totally fine. But for me, that's what a lot of very specific preparation looks like, and that's what led to me being able to get the submission that I did.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a lucky grab at all. And so you were last minute coming into this match. So you were replacing who?
Fionn Davies.
Got you.
So this was supposed to be a title match for the 125 who's number one belt. So Fionn currently holds the 125 belt. And Tubby, Amanda Alacuin was gonna fight Fionn for that belt. And then Fionn got injured. So I got the call up 2 weeks before this match saying, hey, do you want to step in so that Tubby still has a match? And I said, absolutely. Like, where do I sign? Send me over. But yeah, 2 weeks notice.
Dude, you stepped in 2 weeks notice and you finished it in seconds. So good. Let's review the match here. So it starts. So you start off dapping up and just run us through.
So for jiu-jitsu, this is like a guard pull. So playing on my butt just allows me to get access to my legs so I can kind of manage distance and stop her from essentially crushing me. And as she came down, I tried to get a grab on her head, but she's very savvy to it. So I got underneath and I used my legs to elevate her body up so I could get her heel rested onto my ribs. So because it was sitting on my ribs and I was holding it nice and tight, I could get like a little bit of rotational force that treks through her knee and her ankle, and that's what got me the submission.
So good. So right there, did you know you had it when at this point here?
Yeah. As soon as her heel, so you can see that like her toes are sitting in my armpit and her heels are sitting at my rib. And if I kind of make an uppercut motion, her heel starts to turn and that torque can sometimes run through the knee. And if not the knee, then it starts to run through like the shin and the ankle.
Yeah.
And then I just kept rotating with it to keep it nice and tight and just keep applying that pressure. And then we ended up kind of on the ground, and that's when I could put a full like bridge into it with my hips. And then at this point I knew that it was on and it was tight and that she wouldn't be able to pull her foot out.
Wow. Dude, that's so, so good. And what was your thoughts there at like, did you think she was injured? Did you think like were you just in your own world? Like what's the process when you've come in 2 weeks notice to someone who's about to go in to get the title, essentially. That's what she was trying to do. And you come in against the number one contender and just finish her off that quick and that emphatically.
I was definitely excited, but I think at that point, like as soon as I got the submission, just because I heard some of the sounds that her knee and her ankle were making, I was just concerned whether she was okay. But when I saw her moving her knee, I was just happy to see that her knee was moving okay. And I knew that she'd be like really, really tough to submit. Like Tubby is an excellent competitor. She's been around for a very long time. She has some like massive wins under her belt, and she's notoriously hard to submit. I don't think she'd been submitted in 2 years prior to this match.
She hasn't. So she hadn't been.
Yeah, for 2 years prior to the match. Yeah. Wow. That's my understanding. But yeah. I knew that she was going to be really tough to submit. I knew that she's just a tough competitor in general, and I've been watching her for a very long time. So I was definitely happy to have gotten the win, but also wanted to make sure she wasn't injured and that she could get onto the training mats the next day, and that, you know, she could get straight back into her competition career as well.
And what was the post match analysis from you and your team? I always wonder, like, how the teams, you know, in a back room, like once everything's died down, maybe at dinner or something, what the discussion is post a match like that and getting the victory.
We definitely went straight into analysing everything. I think the more data we get, the better it is. And we use every opportunity to gather as much data as we can. I think the main talking points for it were some things that I could work on is just like maintaining distance a little bit more and preventing her from getting any kind of wrist grips on me. And we were happy at the fact that we talked about a game plan. I could stick to the game plan quite comfortably. Even though it was kind of not a lot of mat time to analyze, it was all the other things around that. Like what we did the day before, was I feeling good getting onto the mat? Did we do a good warm-up? Was the warm-up what we needed? Was the diet what we needed? So for that match, I feel like I ate slightly too close to actually getting out there. So that's something that we're now going to adjust a little bit.
So you do think there are some things, even in that performance, that you did wrong?
There's always things to improve on. There's always adjustments to be made. I think that when you get to when you get to high level competition, there's always things you can do better. There's always things you can adjust. And sometimes it's not even the performance. It's the other things surrounding the performance. It's the diet. It's the mentality. It's the this song, you know, that I had on my pre-comp playlist was making me feel a certain way, so I got to get rid of it and change it to this song. Sometimes it's just those little things.
Did you know something that's really interesting that I don't think, you know, I've seen a lot of people review tape, but I've never really discussed things that someone believes that they did incorrectly in the match. Like that will be pretty cool. Me, it's like quite a flawless performance. What would you say here was incorrect that you could have done better?
I think off balancing her a little bit more. So when she came down, specifically that little moment where she comes down and I try and get over her head, I think coming up and like getting a better wrap on her head, I was a little bit tentative to come up and work my head wrap. So as she falls, I didn't commit as much as I would have wanted to this position. So she pulled it out straight away just because I didn't come underneath and actually cup her chin because I was not kind of committing to that exchange. Gotcha. From here, like even the fact that she's grabbing the back of my head, I could have dealt with that a little bit earlier so I could get better elevation. So her left hand's sitting at the back of my head. I could have dealt with that with my free hand. Things like that I could have addressed earlier. With the actual finish, to be honest, I'm happy with the finishing mechanics of when we went belly down and I used my hips. It's just like some of the little things in the lead up that I'm definitely putting more time in on the mats to just make sure that I'm addressing those things, because even though they didn't cause me any issues in this particular match, I want to prevent them from causing me any issues in matches down the line.
Gotcha. And do you want to go for the title? Who's number one?
100%. I think I'm in a really good shot to have a go at the 125 title against Fionn. But not only that, like I want to have a good shot at the 115 title. That title's been super like vacant for a while. Well, not even vacant. It hasn't been fought for about 2 years at this point. So a competitor called Maisa Bastos, she's holding it at the moment, and I'm trying to get a shot at that title match, but it's tough to motivate her to want to actually take the match for whatever reason. She seems to not want the match, and she's taken other matches elsewhere, but she's holding the belt, and I think that she needs to fight for the belt. And if she doesn't want to fight for the belt, I think it's only fair that she vacates it and lets other competitors fight for it, because right now it's a very, very quiet division and a very, very quiet belt. And I think that we can definitely bring some life back into the 115 division.
Why would you prefer that one than the one that you just won? This division?
Both. I'm definitely very motivated to want to fight in both divisions.
You want to be a double champ, Adele. Call it out. You want to be a double champ.
100%. I want to be.
Let's go.
I'm trying to trying to think if there's been another female double champ. I definitely could be wrong. There definitely could be a female double champ. I know that there's been a few male double champs. I know that Pato holds two of the titles at the moment after that Heroes number one. He got his second title. Awesome.
Yeah,
it was a phenomenal match. Excellent match. But I definitely want to be a double champ. Like, I think that I can be competitive in both of those divisions. I think that I'm very – my game, my style works very well in both of those divisions. I think it's just motivating the guys that are actually holding the belts to fight for the belts. I think that's now becoming the tricky part.
So you think both women are scared?
I don't think Fionn's scared. I think she's motivated to hit as many competitions as she can. I think that Maissa needs to get back on the Who's Number One mats is what I think. I think she hasn't fought on that platform for 2 years. She's been active in the gi and she's just hit recently she just competed at one. She actually competed against somebody I've competed against before that I managed to hit a pretty fast submission on the person she got a decision win on. So I think that she needs to get back on the Who's Number One stage and defend that belt. But if she's not willing to defend the belt, that's fine. But vacate it and give it to people that actually that'll be willing to consistently fight for it.
How long was the time period between Who's Number One and Grapple Fest?
Something along the lines of 3 weeks.
So 3 weeks you went. So you got a 2 week notice for Who's Number One, and then you went in there absolutely destroyed. And then 3 weeks later, you come and retain your belt at Grapple Fest.
It was a very fast turnaround. Yeah, it was
such a fun.
The Who's Number One wasn't exactly planned. It just happened. Mm-hmm. But I had the Grapple Fest title match planned for a bit of time, so I was always excited to be competing under Grapple Fest. It's a really really fun event.
I didn't have how long have you held the title there?
That is a very good question. It would be somewhere along the lines of about a year. Something like that. That's just the guess off the top of my head. It'd be somewhere around that time frame.
Gotcha. And so you're flying in and out of these comps and just representing like Australia, like in the best way, which is amazing to see. Like everyone that, you know, I train with, I was saying that you're coming on the podcast, they were super excited. And it's just good to see that a female's out there and representing the sport well. You know, Craig Jones represents for Australia, but, you know, he represents in a unique way, you know.
He's riding his own wave right now.
I saw an image of his fight at UFC Fight Pass and then some random kid like pointed at him and he was like, "Nose beers after."
Nose beers after.
And this kid's like 12 years old. This kid should not know what a nose beer is. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Oh, it's outrageous.
There's people that are actively trying to like go out and be role models for the kids, and then there's Craig Jones who's just doing his own thing.
What are some other Aussie grapplers that you think are really good and can excel at the elite high level?
Well, like Isaac Michelli is already out there doing it. I think he's a phenomenal competitor. I got to watch him at ADCC trials. I think he's doing amazing things on the international scene. He did very well. I think it was AIGA that he did. He did very well at that. There's a lot of just unknown talent out there that I'm guessing will sneak onto the scene. You know, Reese Allen, who actually has a judo background, who's now come onto the jiu-jitsu scene in a very big way, came second at trials against Kenta. And he's a purple belt. So he may have gotten his brown belt recently. Don't quote me on that. But he's coming onto the scene in a big way and he's doing some really cool things. And then there's obviously all the local talents coming through, like Nadia Franklin, who I've had the privilege of having a few matches with, but she did very well in the European ADCC trials, but unfortunately got injured in a very weird way. Wasn't in a submission. It was just in a really weird like, guard passing position. But you know, she's going to come back for the next trials and she's doing some awesome things. So we have a lot of talent. We have a lot of really good competitors that represent Australia very well on the international scene, and are very competitive with some of the American talent and the Brazilian talent. You know, I don't want to leave out people like Levi Jones, who just recently competed at, I think it was at ADXC, I think he competed at, and he had a great performance with Jonathan Gracie, which was a really cool match. But we have a lot of guys out there.
ADXC was just, it was so hard to get a stream for over here in Australia, but they had some really cool matches on there. It was,
they did.
Yeah, I wanted to, yeah, if you got some type of link, I don't, I couldn't find
a link. That'll be after the podcast. I'll see if I can find you a link.
Sweet. And do you follow other sports, like what happened with Ngannou and Joshua yesterday in boxing?
I saw it all comes up on my Instagram, but I don't actually sit there and watch much boxing. I watch a little bit of UFC. Like I watch the guys that I like I watch like Volkanovski.
Yeah.
I watch Mackenzie Dern because I actually got the privilege of meeting her and training with her at Atos. So I really like to watch her matches. Oh, she's an absolute savage, man. She goes out there every time and gives it everything. But also, like, it's a performance. She makes it interesting for everybody.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, I got into tennis. I really enjoy watching tennis.
Okay, right. Nice, nice. Last time I played tennis, I rolled my ankle and face planted into the net. That was my experience of the sport. Do you try and play? Do you try and get out there and have a little hit back?
I'm terrible at it. So my partner, she actually used to play quite like high up tennis.
Yeah.
So every now and then we'll play together. So she started jiu-jitsu, I want to say like 2 and a bit years ago. So on the jiu-jitsu mats, I'll give her trouble. But then we get to the tennis courts and she is pelting balls at me, getting a little bit of payback for me kind of kicking a butt on the jiu-jitsu mat. She'll get payback on the tennis mats, on the even tennis court.
More, I love it. And just before I let you go, thank you for staying with us for so long as well. So here you're training with Dominance.
Yes.
And then in America, you're, I guess, under Atos, or you train with them when you're over there when you can. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And so, how was that link? So, like, for Australian athletes looking to go and compete in America, and they, you know, want to find a team over there, and they want to, you know, train with them or whatever it is. How did that link happen with you and Atos, and why Atos?
So a couple of things kind of led to it. I met Galvao when I was quite young. He came to Australia and taught a seminar at Dominance, funny enough, and I saw how kind of personable he was and what his character was like, and that made a big impact when I was young. But when I was – I want to say, I think it was my brown belt when I was leading into doing Nogi Worlds as a brown belt. I did a camp there. And just the culture of the space and the high-level competitors that were there, it was a very good lead-up for me to go compete at Worlds. And I did very well at Worlds, and I ended up winning at Brown Belt Worlds Nogi. So that was a very fun experience, and I really connected with a lot of the team there and a lot of the, specifically the girls there. And then went back to Australia. At the time I was in Perth, so I was still kind of consistently training. And then I did the gi season. And when I did gi season, I came back to America and I did a little bit of like shopping around to see what environment in America suited me best. Made some really lovely connections with a lot of lovely people. Like got the privilege of training at some very high level gyms. But while I was training at these high level gyms, I went to San Diego just to pop my head into Atos, to say hello. And as soon as I popped my head through the doors, the team there, they were like, oh, how are you going? Like, what's going on? How you been? We really miss you. Just that kind of environment where you felt very welcomed and very like cared for, and that these guys actually they actually care how you're doing and they actually want you in the space. I think that that was a big factor for me, was the actual cultural aspect of it. Every time I come in and out of America quite a bit. So all of my major training camps are predominantly done out of Atos. So that's where that link came in. And Galvao has been nothing but welcoming, and Angelica has been nothing but welcoming, and the whole team there has been very, very supportive. And that's kind of how that relationship built over time. And Atos have a great relationship with Dominance as well, which makes things, makes it more so a team rather than everything feeling like really disconnected, which was nice.
Gotcha.
For me, it's a big cultural thing. I do jiu-jitsu because I genuinely enjoy doing jiu-jitsu. Like I get enjoyment out of training. I get enjoyment out of competing. For a very long time, I didn't enjoy competing. I really struggled with it. I wanted to love competing, but I didn't for a little bit there. And then I refound some of that enjoyment through competition. And now I absolutely love it. But if I wanted to be miserable, I'd be miserable and rich, and I'd be working a desk job. If my aim in life was to just be miserable, then I wouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu. I do jiu-jitsu because I genuinely love jiu-jitsu.
I hear you. And I love how it's such a great community where, you can speak to Galvan and like people like at that level that's done it in, has held the ADCC title for like a long time. He's such a legend. And you can speak, like I was with Danaher, came down and you can just go and speak to him. He's training Gordon and a lot of high level people, and I'm just there in one of his like seminars, just speaking to him like casually. I love how the sport has that community aspect to it, which is beautiful. Is actually, speaking of John Danaher, side quest question here. What's your thoughts on Helena?
I think she's an amazing competitor. I think that for somebody that is like, she's quite young, but she's very talented in the sport. She works incredibly hard. She's surrounded by a lot of knowledge, so she learns very quickly. I very, very briefly kind of said hello while she was at Grapplefest, because she was at the same event that I was at. She had a very dominant performance at Grapplefest. I think she's an amazing competitor and has a very, very bright future ahead of her.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for the time. Any last things that you'd like? I definitely want to have you on again. It was actually, you moved from Melbourne to Perth and then from Perth back to Melbourne, because I'm heading over to Perth. I was going to say, I definitely want to have you in future in person. I always really enjoy those conversations. What was the move? Like why move back to the cold and miserable city that is Melbourne? Shots fired from the Sydney side.
I was going to say, from Sydney. Well, it's boiling at the moment. It's got to be like 30 degrees at least at the moment. After this, we're going to go down the road and get some acai because it's that hot. That once in a year heat wave that we get here. So I moved
it's
to Perth
last
because
3 hours, all right? It's going to
exactly,
last 3 hours.
And then it'll start raining. the move to and from, so we moved to Perth because my partner was studying dentistry there. She had 3 more years on her degree, so she was studying at UWA, so we went there. But I think it was one of the best things I could have done. I met some amazing people while I was there, some people that are still kind of within my team at the moment. So Jake O'Driscoll's out there, and he plays a big part in making sure I'm in the right mindset, I have the right strategy. He plays a big role as somebody that's in my team. So, I got to meet some new people and experience some different jiu-jitsu while I was there. But we ended up moving back just because family is here and, we like to be around family, and moving back to Dominance obviously was a big part to play as well. I started at Dominance when I was 10. It's always been my jiu-jitsu home in Australia. The culture there is amazing. That I have people that are like my family there. So moving back was more so about like family and a bit about training.
Gotcha. Awesome. No, that's fair enough. Nice and quick. That was
It's not as in-depth as me. Pardon me?
Have you got the belt there that you can show us?
Oh, I do.
Is it heavy? What's it? Damn.
The metal is quite like thick on it, so it actually is heavy. It's a pain in the butt to get through customs though.
Oh, really? What were they saying?
I put it in my backpack, and when they scan it through, all they see is this big metal sheet on top. So they're like, okay, let me look in your bag. And I'm like, and then they open it, and then every time one of the guys from customs is like, oh, what's this for? Oh, I don't want to mess with you. They make the same jokes every time. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, and then you're like, yep. Yeah. But at the first time, you're like, yeah, fuck yeah. And like, by like you've gone through so many times, like, yep, that's right. That's my belt. Yeah. Bro, it's so sick. It's so good.
It's like when I go through customs in America when they're, when they're scanning your passport, they go, oh, what are you doing in America? You know, they always ask you that. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
I go, oh, I'm here to train jiu-jitsu. And like 99% of the time, the person that's scanning your passport is like, oh, you do jiu-jitsu? I do jiu-jitsu. Oh, where are you training? Where are you going? I'm like, oh, well, I'm going here and I'm training here. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. I'm like, oh, how long have you been? We always have this like back and forth conversation about jiu-jitsu every time.
What's your thoughts on the explosion of jiu-jitsu? Because it has like, back when you started, it wasn't as nowhere near as big as when it is now, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think jiu-jitsu is progressively growing, especially with the different rule sets where it's a little bit more viewer friendly for people that don't train. I think we're drawing in a big audience of people that don't actually need to train jiu-jitsu to understand it or to get enjoyment out of watching it. It's funny because we had people from World Vision come by the doors the other day. You know, they're doing their door-to-door thing and they were asking, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I do jiu-jitsu. They're like, oh, I love jiu-jitsu. I watch a lot. I'm like, do you guys train? They're like, no, I just really love watching it. And I was like, oh, no, like people that watch it that don't actually train, it was very surprising to me in Australia as well.
It's so good, eh?
It's blowing up, man. It's like in America, it's always been big, but it's getting bigger just all the way across the world.
And it looks like ADCC is going to be huge. Absolutely.
I think it'll be like the biggest jiu-jitsu event that has ever existed.
Are you going to compete at ADCC?
So I'm going to do trials in Bangkok. So I did the trials in Singapore. I had a clean run through the trials in Singapore. I got a submission in all of my matches. But the way that the tickets work for the females is because there's only 8 competitors in each female division, every second trials gives us a ticket.
Right.
So there's 16 male competitors and there's 8 female competitors. So for the males, every trials wins a ticket.
Yeah.
For the females, it's every second trial. So the one in Bangkok is the one that actually wins the female ticket. So I'm going to be going over to Bangkok on the 11th of May. That's when it is. And I'll be competing in that.
Massive. Legend, mate. Yeah. Good luck for that one. And hopefully it will get you on in future as the future 100%. ACC champ.
100%, man. I feel it.
Let's go. Thank you so much, Adele Fornarino. Anything that you'd like to leave them with?
Oh, I just want to say thanks. Thanks so much for having me. And, it's been a pleasure to be on the show and just have a chat about all the jiu-jitsu things. I obviously want to say a massive thank you to all the people that support me and all my sponsors. You know, I'm repping Hyperfly today. Always repping them, and they got awesome gear in the business. All the guys at Dominance and Atos for always supporting me. All the guys at Bulletproof, Midnight City, and at Black Magic. Just all those guys for looking after me and making sure I can do what I do. They've been endless supportive. But yeah, massive thank you to them as well.
Awesome. Appreciate you, mate. Speak soon. Thank you so much. Yeah, keep destroying.
Always.
If you enjoyed this discussion, make sure to leave a 5-star review. We really appreciate it.